Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
And welcome once again to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. Today we sum up where we've been for many days. We started talking about the human conscience, how it provides rational evidence for the existence of God, how there could be no such thing as right or wrong apart from God. This same conscience suggests a loving deity, because if God is not loving, why would he put into our conscience that we should be loving? And a loving God, well, there's certain things a loving God would do. There's certain things a loving God would not do. A loving God would reveal himself to people, because it would be pretty cruel to create us for a purpose and not tell us what the purpose is. And this revelation would not be new. He would not show partiality to people in the 21st century and ignore the people from centuries gone by. Therefore, we expect consistent communication from God as far back as history can be traced. Consistent meaning it cannot contradict. Different religions contradict. If two different truth claims, religious or otherwise, contradict, they cannot both be true. They may both be false. They cannot both be true. This is where we left off yesterday. This is where we begin today. And naturally, demonstrating that Christianity and other religions are not consistent with each other is not the same as proving Christianity. In fact, on that subject of contradictions, people feel there are all kinds of contradictions in the Bible. They feel that Christianity as a belief system contradicts itself. Well, yes, it certainly does look that way, on first glance at least. But we must remember that the Bible was written in other languages by cultures far removed from ours. Most of these alleged so-called contradictions stem from a misunderstanding of certain terms and phrases. Let me give you an example. Jesus predicted that he would be in the grave for 3 days and three nights. He said this in Matthew chapter 12. Well, when we just move on and read the passion narratives in Matthew and the other Gospels, he was crucified late Friday afternoon. He rose from the dead early Sunday morning. It is impossible to get 3 days and three nights out of this. And I have seen all kinds of atheists refer to Jesus' prophecy as a blatant error, which completely, utterly destroys the credibility of the Bible. My friends, the solution comes simply with an understanding of the way ancient Jews spoke. To a Jew, any part of a day was viewed as a whole day. Describing part of a day as a day and a night may seem foreign to us. We may go, well, what a stupid way to describe days. But that's because we live 2,000 years later in a completely different culture. We must realize that if the Bible did not contradict itself to the original audience it was written for, it cannot contradict itself to us. Now, that is only one example of the many apparent Bible contradictions that melt away in light of authentic historical interpretation. The truth is, Jesus would only have had to have been in the grave an hour on Friday, an hour on Saturday, and an hour on Sunday for them to describe it as 3 days and three nights. Of course, he was there all day Saturday, part of Friday, part of Sunday. That's the way they spoke. We have unusual ways of speaking ourselves. I talked about this a few weeks ago on this show. We go out to a football game and we say, hey, we murdered them. We slaughtered them. We don't really mean it that way. We need to take that into account when we're studying another culture, especially one from so many years ago. Yeah, but Bob, there's a lot more to it than that. The Old Testament, the New Testament, they're so different. Isn't that a contradiction too? No. No, it's not. Not at all. Because again, the Old Testament, meaning Old Covenant or Old Agreement between God and man, the Old Testament predicts the new. The consistency we expect from God is not in the quantity of information, but in the accuracy of the facts. For example, if Susan has a vision in which God says, I love corporate worship, group worship, the kind of worship Sunday morning in church. And then Ron, that same night, has a vision from God which says, I love private worship. It is possible that both parties received an authentic vision. God may like both. He may like corporate worship and private worship, but he was only describing one to one and one to the other. Supposing, however, Susan heard God say, "I hate corporate worship," while Ron heard, "I love corporate worship." Now, somebody is not on the same page. Likewise, if God had warned the Hebrews to never expect another covenant from him, then, naturally, any prophet who came along to institute a new agreement between God and man could be immediately labeled as false. But instead, God said through the prophet Jeremiah, "Behold, the days are coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant I made with their forefathers." That's Jeremiah 31. That's in the Old Testament. The Old Testament predicts the new. Therefore, a New Testament and an Old Testament are not contradictions. Yeah, but Bob, if there's only one God who reveals himself, then how do we account for the differences in people's beliefs? That's a fair question, my friend. Very fair. A loving God would be a gentleman. He would not force himself upon those who don't want him, but would instead speak to those who are seeking. Most people accept the religion they were brought up in without question. Others, when choosing a religion, choose the one that they like or the one that is convenient. Sometimes, like sheep, they're mesmerized by talented orators who speak with charisma and authority. We have only to recall the 900 unfortunate individuals who followed Jim Jones into the wilderness to remember that most become religious simply to have their needs and feelings satiated. Seldom do they say, "I will examine the evidence to see which, if any, of these religions is actually true." All right, you're thinking, but Bob, disproving another religion doesn't prove Christianity. Neither does the harmonization of an alleged Bible contradiction prove the Bible. All that means is maybe it doesn't contradict. That is true, my friend, that's true. For this reason, let's see what we should expect from an accurate religion and compare Christianity accordingly. Remember, we're talking about the revelations of a loving God. First of all, the religion will go hand in hand with our own conscience. That means God will someday, somehow, hold people accountable for the way they live. If he didn't, he would not be a just God. Justice is certainly one quality of goodness, and this, my friends, introduces an immediate problem. I am referring, of course, to our universal guilt, because nobody lives a righteous life. No honest person would claim to live a righteous life. Our divine judge will have to condemn us all. Or will he? Nobody seems to be able to submit completely to the conscience. People are apparently trapped. Would there be no mercy to the woman who cries for release? Would there be no hope for the victim who hates his wicked nature and desires change? Now, mercy is never an obligation, but mercy is still a sophisticated quality found within even the imperfect human. So again, would people have a worthy quality that God doesn't have? How can a loving God execute justice and mercy at the same time? How might he deliver people from the shackles of their own deadly selfishness? From a philosophical point of view, this is not an easy question to answer, but an accurate religion claiming to be revelation from God will certainly address this puzzle. It's the least we would expect. We would also expect some religious teachings concerning life after death. Why? If death is final, once again, God would be cruel. We're talking about a God who is loving, not a God who is cruel. I say this for the simple reason that all people cherish a pleasant, enjoyable life. Who would ever wish for such contentment to end? It would have been less evil for God to abort his plan of creation altogether than to put us here with a love of life and then pull the plug suddenly, consigning us to oblivion without ever again having even a conscious thought. The universe goes on forever and we're not part of it. We don't even have a conscious thought. Yeah, but Bob, some people are glad to die. Suffering in the world makes them miserable. They want this life to end. Granted, my friend, that these people would have preferred a fulfilling life. Otherwise, they would not view suffering as tragic. Even the person who commits suicide will do so because of depression or some tragedy she couldn't cope with, he couldn't cope with. A tired, weak, sick old woman might prefer death over her condition. But if it were possible, she would much rather be rejuvenated to experience once again the health and energy and happiness of her youth. And if she hadn't been happy as a youth, she dreamed of what it would have been like to be happy as a youth. The fact that we even die at all is certainly a mystery, along with the origin of evil, but apparently people were not meant to die. Death is a slap in the face. Death is a final disaster. A loving Heavenly Father will provide some kind of solution for our sick world, a remedy that overcomes death. All forms of evil must someday be destroyed, and what is only a hope for us is a future certainty to God. Yeah, but Bob, that doesn't automatically prove the Christian belief in resurrections. There are all kinds of ideas about life after death, like reincarnation, for instance. Oh, reincarnation, my favorite. My friend, I know you're saying that sincerely. Reincarnation offers no hope from any honest, practical perspective. Think about this. If I am a reincarnated soul, let's just be hypothetical. If I am reincarnated, I am completely unaware of my other lives. I'm just using myself as an example. This means that should I die and come back again, my future identity will be without a knowledge of this life. As Bob Siegel, I perceive my present state as all that I know and all that I love. If this should end, how can I receive consolation? My future existence as a new man or new woman who does not remember Bob Siegel will be, for all intents and purposes, a new person. How does this hope compare to the promise of living for all of eternity as the same person? It's just as if I died and someone else were born. The probability of reincarnation becomes highly questionable, especially in relationship to a caring, loving creator. Okay, Bob, but maybe there's another reason for reincarnation that's more important than our ability to remember past lives. Maybe people are continually changing for the better each time they return. Really? Show me the evidence. Show me the evidence. Our species has had a long time to evolve. Show me the improvement. The improvement in people. People are just as horrid and corrupt now as they were 10,000 years ago. As I've already mentioned, some of the worst atrocities were committed in the 20th century and our own 21st century. According to the suggestion of reincarnation, we have each completed thousands upon thousands of lives. When will there be something to show for it as far as moral evolution goes? Well, some people claim to remember their past identities. Yeah, some do. And some people claim to have received three magic wishes from a genie. A rational improbability does not instantly change simply because of a claimed experience. All right, it is time now to tie up the loose ends. Let's place our tall order. What exactly are we looking for from a loving God? An ancient religion with historical claims to consistent revelation from God. This loving God is both just and merciful. He will offer a deliverance from sin to those who crave such freedom. People who are content in their sin will still be held accountable. Along with this salvation, God will provide an explanation for evil in the world apart from his own activity. Finally, God will offer everlasting life as a paradise. In other words, my friends, we are looking for a God who shares the gospel. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.